Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, my enthusiastic and flattering friend, Tom Chumas. Thank you so much for your welcome. Your Eminence, Archbishop Yakovus, Your Excellency Archbishop Cody, Your Excellency Ambassador Matsis, my friends in the Congress, Governor Kerner and Mayor Daley and Governor Agnew, and the many, many distinguished guests that are here that have graced this dais and this banquet hall tonight by your presence. My good friend Chris Serafin from Milwaukee that gave us a full demonstration of Demosthenes in the 20th century. I scarcely know just where to start, and I hope I shall know where to end and when. But there are so many things that have happened this evening that touch my heart and intrigue my mind that I feel that just for a moment or two I should like to share my observations with you. First of all, the introduction tonight of this very honored and great churchman, Archbishop Yakovus, as he came here to this banquet hall, escorted by the governor of Illinois and the mayor of this great city of Chicago. I think I should tell all of you what happened in the anteroom immediately after these three distinguished leaders, the top leaders, the Archbishop of North and South America for the Greek Orthodox Church, the Chief Magistrate of Chicago, the Chief Executive of Illinois. As they left the room, they left the Vice President with 11 bishops. And Your Eminence, I think you should know that we were organizing while you were away. I said that it's sort of just like being back in Washington when the president goes to Texas and I'm back in Washington. But our moment of glory was but brief. And then we came to this beautiful banquet hall and to see these fine and wonderful people. And as I sat down, after having been escorted through this fine audience in the presence of these 11 distinguished bishops, our friend George Christopher, the former mayor of the great city of San Francisco, said to me, "I've never known anyone that received such a God-blessed introduction as you have." And then to receive an introduction as I did tonight by our friend Tom Chumas reminded me of what the late and beloved Adlai Stevenson used to say about introductions. He said, "Flattery is all right if you don't inhale it." But my dear friends, I inhale. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for the kind words. There are one or two other observations that I should make, because John Rademus, the power block leader and the Greek power block in Congress, has excited everyone tonight by his call for Greek power. And I think he ought to know that I didn't come here unarmed. I am proud to say that associated with the Vice President are several people of Greek descent, all of whom are perfectly willing to challenge John Rademus's block at any time, or may I say to join it. And in light of what I see and hear tonight, I think we'll join. But I have, as one of my aides and military aide, Colonel Mike Nisus, and one of our secretaries and one of the most beautiful and able secretaries, Zoe Gratzias. And then I have the one who has been mentioned here that came out to make sure that the vice president was real happy, Nick Kostopoulos. And even a member of our Secret Service detail is of Greek extraction. I have Ken Giannoulis. So when you get those all added together, I think that I can claim a rather sizable block myself. And then I have Mike Manitos to help me, too, in case these congressmen get out of hand. But what a joy it is to have Peter Kairos serving now in the House of Representatives, and this fine new man from down in North Carolina, this Greek Tar Heel, Nick Galifianakis. And I think I missed that, didn't I, Nick? Galifianakis. That's better. That's pretty good for a half-breed Norwegian. And now may I just say a word to my friend Mayor Daley. I want you to watch out for your laurels, Mr. Mayor, because when I heard tonight that there were 6,000 Americans of Greek descent holding public office, I got to worrying about what was going to happen to the Irish. And then, too, Dick, I think we have to worry a little bit politically when we see such a charming and gifted governor of a different political persuasion as Governor Agnew here. But we're very proud of him, and I think you all know that it's a great sense of joy that we looked upon him as one of the leading governors in our 50 great states. Your Eminence, I didn't come here merely with the political leaders at my side. I came with Father John and Father James, too, I want you to know, so that our voyage here was guarded not only by the Air Force, but by divine providence. Tonight, I want to share some thoughts with this audience about our country, but particularly about this great and beloved man of faith, Archbishop Jacobus. For me, it's a high privilege and a very valued privilege to participate in what I think is the most appropriate occasion of all, an all-American tribute to a gentleman, to a spiritual leader that represents, I think, the all-American virtues of faith and dedication to God and country. This all-American tribute to Archbishop Jacobus and to the great church and the great faith which he represents in these two Americas of the North and of the South. For almost 2,000 years, as you know so well, your ancient church has inspired and sustain the Greek people in all of their trials and tribulations and wanderings. And my, how the Greek people have had to fight to survive. And in that battle, I think their qualities have been truly improved and expanded and brought into full fruition. And it was with and through your church that Greek art and learning flourished through many centuries of Byzantium, when Byzantium was a shining beacon of civilization amidst a gathering darkness. And those who are students of your faith know so much more about this than I. In all the sorrows which befell the Greek people after the fall of that great metropolis, the Greek Orthodox Church was a pillar of strength for them and an emblem of hope for better times to come. Now, more recently, the church contributed mightily to the victory of the Greek people over communism. Communism in the 20th century, a victory to which all Americans are proud and happy to have had some share and to have given timely aid. And by the way, in the very few months, we will be celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Truman Doctrine, when that great president saw the danger that was moving through the Mediterranean into Southern Europe and gave timely aid to a brave people as they fought back then the communist forces who were seeking to capture that foothold in that part of the world. But the aid would have been of little avail had it not have been for the people and for the church. Now, in the light of this experience, I'm not at all surprised, and although I am deeply gratified, that Archbishop Jacobus has declared forthrightly that the American presence in Vietnam is imperative and justified. And I thank him for it. All nations would do well to examine the Greek example, an example of steadfast support of democracy under the most trying of conditions. And you know, democracy is not easy. You remember what Winston Churchill said about it once? He said, it's the worst possible form of government, except all others. It truly tests man's ingenuity and his intelligence. Democracy sometimes extracts a very high price of those who cherish it. Democracy, above all, requires self-discipline. It requires infinite patience, understanding and compromise on occasion, but above all, respect for the opinions of others. It also requires something that many of us find so difficult to give: respect for dissent, even irresponsible dissent. And how often we are tested by the outrages of those who seek to overthrow democracy, even as they claim democratic rights. Yet despite its demands, I think I can say to you tonight what you believe, that democracy offers the most priceless gift of all, freedom. Now, the Greek nation has paid a high price over the years to preserve that precarious democracy, even as it does today. And we, the citizens of the American democracy, are especially obligated and tied to Greece, obligated and tied through history and philosophy, but even more currently through the developments of the world of our time. We hail the efforts of the Greek people, Mr. Ambassador, towards social and economic betterment, and they have made great progress. We hail their steadfast support of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization when others waver, and of resistance to aggression throughout the world. We hail above all their existence, yes, their presence as free men and women over the centuries. What a glorious example it is for those who are all too often tempted by the false promises of totalitarianism and dictatorship. And we commit ourselves to the preservation of this warm and close bond of friendship between our nations. One of the reasons I wanted to be here tonight was that by trying in my way to express honor and tribute to Archbishop Jacobus, I could, in a sense, express tribute to a great Trinity, to religion, yes, to God, to our country, and to the country of his forebears, Greece, all three together. Ever since those Homeric voyages, the Greek people have crossed the seven seas and established themselves in every part of the world. Wherever they've gone, they have carried with them values much more precious than silver and gold, of which often they had little or none as they sought a new land or a new place. Instead, they have brought with them and dedicated to the service of their new countries their keen and questioning minds, their skills and talents, their tireless industry, and above all, their deep religious faith. And we see it here tonight. We see it all over America, how this great faith has become a part of the American community, a vital part of it. We see doctors and lawyers and governors and congressmen, legislators, people of every walk of life in labor and education and the professions, all giving so much now, not only to America, but to the world. And yet it was just a little over a century ago, my fellow Americans, that the first Greek Orthodox Church was established here in these United States. And as an American, as I said earlier, of at least in part Norwegian descent, my mother having been born there, I'm happy to say tonight how much all of us have benefited from having you among us. No longer, you see, do we seek to have Americans sort of stamped out all alike. We, in fact, rejoice in our differences. We do not seek a unanimity in this country. We seek a unity based upon respect for human individuality. We are, I think, a very much more mature and responsible and wise society today than we were years ago when there was some effort to make all Americans homogenized and standardized as they came to these shores. Just as we welcome a world of difference and diversity, so we glory in an America of the different ethnic groups and religious faiths, an America of diversity, an America that is all the richer for the many different and distinctive strands of which it is woven. It's a mosaic, isn't it? Each part distinct and different and colorful, with its own individuality and personality, but together making a beautiful design of a free nation, a blessed nation. So I'm happy to pay tribute tonight to Americans of Greek descent, to their church, and I'm particularly happy to pay tribute to the man who represents all of this with such high distinction, this magnificent man, Archbishop Yakovas, who is with us tonight. Because he's a man for all times, and yet a man much for our times as well. He's a citizen of the world. The world does claim him, but also in a very real sense, a distinguished citizen of this nation. He's a scholar. He's a linguist. He's an eloquent preacher, a gifted author, a learned theologian, a good and devoted shepherd of his flock. But not only of his flock. For while the ancients spoke of mankind as divided between the cities of the Greeks and the barbarians, Archbishop Yakovas is inspired by a deep belief in the oneness of the family of man, in God Almighty, the Father of us all, and in we, the people, his children. Now, matching his creed with deed, he has worked tirelessly over the years for the unity of all Christians. He is a leader of the great ecumenical movement of which we have spoken tonight. And of course, this movement is one of the truly hopeful portents of this troubled and tormented century. As a leader of the ecumenical movement, he has ably represented his church at the headquarters of the World Council of Churches in Geneva. And he is presently, as you know, among the elected leaders of the World Council and also our own National Council of Churches. And in these eloquent words, he welcomed in 1965 the Declaration of Religious Liberty of the Second Vatican Council, And let me say at this moment, as has been indicated here, people came to these shores in its earliest days not to get rich, not merely to stake out for themselves a profession, but they came here because they wanted to worship God. They came here out of deep religious conviction. And I say to my friends who say they believe in freedom and democracy, there is no freedom and there is no democracy unless you can accept in your heart and soul the fact that God created man in his own image. But His Eminence had this to say of the Declaration of Religious Liberty of the Second Vatican Council: "This declaration, we pray and hope, will help to establish more securely the unalienable rights of all men and will initiate a new era of closer understanding among all churches and between them and the sincere believers of every God-fearing faith. A call to unity." And it was in this spirit that he appealed that same year to the leaders of the people of the Soviet Union, to the leaders and, I should say, the people of the Soviet Union, so many of whom are our Christian Orthodox brethren, to allow the devout Jews in their midst to practice their ancient beliefs and customs without curtailment. You see, here are the words of a man who recognizes the family of man. In fulfilling his great responsibilities, Archbishop Iacovus has traveled many thousands of miles every year to many parts of the world, and I ask him how he can look so well and with such a constant, radiant countenance of happiness and joy. And it's because he loves his work and loves people. Yet I venture to think that even with all of his journeys to the Far East and in North and South America, his journeys to Vietnam and elsewhere, that the most significant of all of his journeys was the one that he took in 1965, right here in the United States, to Selma, Alabama. By his very presence, my fellow Americans, he gave visible authority and dignity, visible throughout our nation and throughout the world, of the commitment of many millions of Americans of all faiths to the cause of racial justice and humanity in this country. And he made clear the position of his church when he declared that the Greek Orthodox Church believes in the full equality of all races and peoples. Christian love, he said, is not a semantic symbol. It is a commandment to which we must conform our actions as Christians and strive in every way to make a reality consistent with the will of God, which was expressed by his Son Jesus Christ when he said, "Love ye one another." These are powerful words. And in his special message to his clergy, His Eminence said, "It is our duty and the duty of the clergy to enlighten and try to convince Christians that we serve, that the enforcement of this law," and he referred then to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, "is their sacred obligation. As descendants of Hellas, which first among all nations of the world fought for freedom against every manner of segregation and discrimination, we are charged," he said, "with the responsibility of promoting and advancing the cause of equality, and thus identifying ourselves as true believers and perpetuators of our Hellenic Christian tradition of democracy and justice." No more eloquent words could be spoken for the cause that this nation stands, the cause of human equality in freedom, of opportunity in freedom. These are the words of transcendent truth, well and truly spoken by a man of truth. They bring to bear on the challenges and the necessities of our own time and our own place, a timeless wisdom and a timeless faith. And it's because with grace and dignity and eloquence, Archbishop Jacobus has spoken and acted in the highest traditions of religious life that I, as your vice president and as your fellow citizen and friend, take great pride tonight in joining in this great tribute to him. America, our beloved America, that Lincoln called the last best hope on earth, and it is it a better America? It's a more just America. It's a more free and stronger country because of the spiritual leadership and love of this man of faith and courage. And I say tonight that the cause of peace and freedom, of justice and equality, have found in Archbishop Jacobus a true champion. And may God Almighty continue to bless this good and dear man for years to come as he does his work amongst the people. Thank you.